Happy Shift Thought, everyone. How's everyone doing today?
Good.
It has been quite a few weeks, it seems like, since we've actually had actual service. So, how's everyone doing since that? So, tonight, what I was seeing for hosting was being connected with the Torah portion, and the Torah portion, letting it read us, and then whatever is being exposed in that, just continuing to act on it. So for this image, I actually had help. I asked AI to kind of incorporate multiple things but to make it actually look nice and not look all put together. But what I was seeing with this is like the Torah portion, and then like a magnifying glass will like go into you, so it's like reading you. And then on the other way, like the person looking into it, it's like Hebrew words, like so it's like the actual words that way. So like I was just thought of because of everything that has been like we've been going through in just making sure that when we are being exposed that we are continuing to work things out. And then for the sense, this Frankenstein, and that is when I was researching it, it was to help activate spiritualness and what was it? One other thing. And physical action. So like I figured that would be good if we're continuing to move, that having that scent would like help us go into a place where we can just continuously move. So, and Jason also has trading cash if you guys need that.
Thanks, Kyle. I know you already asked, but it is. I want to ask like, how's everybody doing? But at the same time, it feels like we're just in a place where it feels like we're ready to just receive what is to come tonight. And so I want to acknowledge that and just make sure that we're aware of that in ourselves and we're staying in that posture because it feels good. It feels like we're ready. We came in, we're seated. It feels like we're hungry and ready to go. Just like Kyle pointed out, over the past couple of weeks, it's been a little bit different, right? It's been a little bit odd. We've had some events. We've had some different family gatherings that looked different than our typical time. But of course, with all of that, we know that what's been established in us as a family and as a community is that we're not just this routine, mundane, go with the flow, all while we're dead on the inside, but we're trying to put on a pretty front, right? So despite the lack of, despite the lack of regularity in our gatherings, we know that it is not missing how much we're being read, how much is being exposed, and knowing that what's being continually established in us is that identity, the antidote to stiff-neckedness. Remember the previous weeks that we've been talking about? That all still applies, right? Whether we gather or not, we're a people that carry that and walk it out, right? And of course, the exposure and the extreme clarity that comes with that. This past several weeks, month, a little bit over a month or so, there's been extreme exposure and there's been extreme clarity with it. And it's from that place that we're going to continue to move and be more and more aligned and closer to His image, right? I want to repeat a quote or say something that was actually spoken over the family and on behalf of the family by the mother of the house a couple weeks ago. It was at the beginning of the month. It was the last Torah portion teaching that we had before we had different shifts in service and different forms of family gatherings. But she was specifically talking about the calling that's on her life and Dad's life, and then by extension, the calling that's on all of us. And I want to read that because I think it's a good place for us to be postured in, to be aware of, and to be carrying as we, again, gather tonight and we receive whatever it is that we have an elder sister to release over us, okay?
I get scared of awful.
There's only like two customers in it. referring to the calling that is on her life, and then, of course, like I said, by extension of that, that is on all of us as well, is that she is called to dig out the gold, demand fullness, and not settle for anything less. I'm going to say that again. We as a people are called to dig out the gold, demand fullness, and not settle for anything less. We know that we have a God that is faithful and will do what he says he will do. And we are a people who are seeking to emulate that and do our part to match that and follow through on what he asked, but also what we said that we are going to do in response. So be postured in those things tonight. Be ready to receive this next Torah portion and everything that comes with it as we gather tonight and move into Shabbat.
All right, you guys. I feel a little bit like a kid tonight that is... Someone cheers to that? I feel a little bit like a kid because I've never taught with mom and dad here. So, you know, when your parents tell you that they're going to come see you do like a school project or give a presentation and you're like, oh my gosh, I'm so excited you're going to be there. And then at the same time, they're like, I hope they're proud of me. At least that's how I always felt. Like there's this excitement and this anticipation because they don't always get to see those kinds of things, you know, or be a part, like just being with them and at the same time and see like what's been multiplied in you and how are you carrying yourself and how like there's just such a honor in that when your parents get to see you and at the same time you're like, hey, I know I have a lot to grow, but I'm trying my darndest. At least that's how I always felt. Anyways, sounds like we all agree. Yeah. Anyway, so I am really excited to be able to just release tonight, especially in just light of where we've been as a family. For a couple of reasons. One, it feels like an extreme honor to be able to release on the portion when we've had so much time just being family. And what I love about what Jason was expressing and what Kyle was expressing as they were preparing our hearts for tonight is that regardless of what we do on a Friday night, how it looks, that we are operating continually and consistently as a people in pursuit of righteousness. And because righteousness is more than a philosophy or a concept, and it is very much about what every day of your life and every moment of your life looks like, that we have over the course of the last, how long has it been? Three, four weeks? 3 weeks? That over that time, that there has been press or pressure, that there has been refinement, that there has been exposure.
Like 20 years.
Yes. that has continued. And so I'm excited to be able to sit under his word in a way that reflects where we have been and also the refinement that's taken place in us over the course of that time, because it's not like the course of that time was a time off. It's not like the course of that time was more lax. It's not like the course of that time was removed or that you were all of a sudden in your, like in an old place or consumed with self, but that you were self-driven outside of corporate driving something like understanding of his word, right? So it's always such an incredible opportunity, I think, when we have a shift, not a break, but when we have a shift from the structure that we're used to, because that is when you really are able to recognize if it is a lifestyle. And those shifts are essential and they're intentional when Yahweh leads them and when we have oversight of the house that directs them, so that we can assess and truly gauge in life, am I becoming versus am I simply putting on a facade or walking in the remnants of religion where I can put on my spiritual hat and my spiritual face when I need to, and we are too mature and too far removed and too raised to operate in that manner. So I'm excited to be able to feel, even tonight, as we dive into what is he saying specifically through this portion for our house, how we come under that is a reflection of where we've been. Okay? So pay attention to your level of awareness, understanding, the wisdom that comes, not through me, but literally what connects with you in the spirit, because you've been allowing yourself to be prepared and ready. Even in the exposure that we know we've been in, we just had Shavuot, where there was such intentionality in the weeks prior and every day of that Omer count to prepare a place for what he's releasing now, right? So, which is the fullness of joy in understanding the goodness of his instructions, which we said at Shavuot, we are in a totally different place from one season to another, where now we have this hunger, this passion, this understanding that is beyond obedience, meaning just, I have to obey. I understand it's a requirement. I have to obey. But now we're in a place where we are hungry to obey, because we know through personal testimony, right, which is the word that we were carrying over Shavuot, was as you become, you are embodying the testimony of what happens when you pursue righteousness on his behalf. When you come under his fathering, you begin to transform, and your life is a testimony. So that should, by its very nature, position you in hunger and devotion. When you're transformed, you're like, I don't just need to obey, but I am desperate and hungry to work through whatever it is that's in me that keeps me from obeying, because I know that it's for me and it's good. And it's changing everything about who I am and about the way that I live my life. And there is a joy that comes with that, which is the beginning of this portion. There's a joy that comes, a natural overflow of obedience that will supersede any happiness or pleasure or feeling, because joy is so different. So we're going to talk a little bit about that as we start the portion, but the fullness of the word for our house at this time has more to do with the individual and the community and judgment and justice. Okay? What I mean by the individual and the community is that Yahweh has already established that we are beyond thinking or doing, acting, etc., on behalf of ourselves. He's moved us or grown us past being individually minded, and we are now covenantal community focused. Right? Okay, so that is a mindset that he wants us to be tapped into as we hear the word tonight. When we break down judgment and justice, it is from an individual perspective so that it can be on behalf of the community. Okay? Okay. So this portion is short. It always surprises me when we have a short portion, because my thought always goes to how, I mean, I know that we're in a 3-year study versus a 1-year, but it will, by its nature of the verses selected, send me to a deeper questioning of why those verses. Why was that enough? Like, I guess that's my thought, is why was that enough for someone to decide, this is all you need in this exact moment, which for us means, as a community, this is what we need.
Yeah.
Right? If Yahweh determined that we needed a 3-year study, not a 1-year,
at such a time
that we received this portion at such a time, and he said verses 13 through 22 are going to be all you need. They might even be all we can handle, in that where we are, there has to be such an emphasis and such a focus on this specific concept that there has to be almost like a tunnel vision, right? Not tunnel vision in an unhealthy, compartmentalizing way, but in that this requires your focus, and the if part of the emphasis is on the individual on behalf of the community, then that means that this is all your house needs to move forward in this moment, right? Because he's outside of time, and this time was set aside for you. So don't allow any remnant of individuality in you keep you from being able to receive that this portion, verses 13 through 22 at this time, are not for you. Okay? What?
And yet for you.
Yes. Yes. So that means it has to be for you. Okay? And it's for the community. All right. So a couple of things just to kind of move through the order of the actual verses, that when we're hearing about feasts, I know there can be a tendency to, I know this, I've heard this, the familiarity that we're trying to safeguard our minds from, right? As a people who have had to come out of such depths of complacency that it's almost like our natural wiring is like, you know this, you know, or you've heard this. That's the complacency that we're having to come out of. And because we have, I'm sure we didn't think that way, but I'm speaking to your mindset in safeguarding us from going back to a place, right? So with the feasts, specifically in this portion, one thing that is significant that we haven't heard in this way is the emphasis on community joy. Now, community joy is an exciting concept that I don't fully understand, but I can gauge that it comes from unity. Now, this is a flip on something in religion, because it's if you simply come together, there can be unity, right? When we gather together, there's unity. Wrong. Right? So the community joy, or the unity that Yahweh is not just requesting, but he's essentially commanding that the feast be celebrated in joy, right? It's not, well, if the activities that are planned for the feast are enjoyable for you, then maybe it'll stir up joy. There's already disunity then. There's already division. There's already, you're already coming in disjointed because joy is a disciplined act. It's an overflow of obedience, absolutely, because the more that you walk within the covering and the protection of his instructions, the more joy you will naturally have, because you're not submitted to death. Right? Amen. We know that joy cannot coexist with death.
Yeah.
Personal disobedience, sin, produces death. Right? So part of the danger of division is that it robs the community of communal joy. I'll try. I'm just talking. part of the danger in disobedience is that it robs the community of joy. And joy is not just an overflow of obedience. It is, for the reasons that I just expressed and that we've come to understand as Yahweh reintroduced the significance of his instructions and the simplicity of walking in a certain manner keeps you safeguarded and protected and covered, which then means you get the fullness of life on earth now, not after you die, which then means you get to experience joy, because joy comes when you are living according to what he says will fulfill you. It's not complicated. It's really simple, but it's complicated when we're coming out of a system that says or grants you permission to pursue superficial satisfaction and happiness instead of the joy that comes from obedience. Okay. Like I said, I'm not going to go into that a whole lot. We have a joy expert in our home, and it's not me. So I'm not going to... She's over there wearing a strawberry skirt. So, with strawberry nails. So I'm still learning about how to fully engage joy.
New position title. Jason,
yeah.
Everything you said I was called to.
She just wants to do that. So I'm not gonna speak a whole lot more to that, but what I want us to gather is essentially that a corrupt community, because this is what's gonna transition us into judgment and justice, okay? A corrupt community will be devoid of joy. Right? I'm gonna say it one more time. A corrupt community will be devoid of joy. And joy is not for your personal satisfaction. So it's not a selfish cry to say, I want to be filled with joy, or I want to ensure that our community experiences joy, because joy is a command. He wants you to rejoice in who he is. Okay? So, if a corrupt community will be devoid of joy, this is where judgment and justice come in. All right. So, first we're going to break down judgment and justice so that we have an understanding of the distinction, which I know we do. None of what Yahweh is speaking to is new, but we're new, and our understanding then of these things is going to be different than what it has been before. And so it helps me as I continuously allow him, which I'm not always great at, but as I work through myself to allow him to make me new constantly, or that renewal process, I have to go back through what I thought I understood before. It's like a constant, it's just a constant working out in your mind, in your heart, where I will represent to him, this was my understanding up to this point. And then I have to wrestle through my prior understanding with what he's bringing further understanding to now, so that I also don't ever get to a place where I'm so arrogant minded that I would say, I already knew that. Yeah. Right? So that's how he teaches me. That's how I allow mom and dad to teach me, is by acknowledging my understanding is not only limited, but it's ever challenged by his deeper understanding. Okay, so we're not going to presume that our understanding of judgment and justice is full. Right? Okay, so we're gonna go through a couple things. This isn't fully encompassing, these aren't concrete definitions. They are simply for the word at this time tonight. Okay? So again, where we are, what we need, at least in the sense of what he highlighted to me. Okay? So hopefully he continues to add to that in your personal lives, even as you take the word tonight into Shabbat. All right. So judges were appointed to ensure justice is not just maintained among his people, but pursued. We're going to have to dive in a little deeper to pursue, which we have before, but through the concept of judgment and justice, okay? We're going to get to that in a little bit because I have it categorized a little differently. So this is kind of just an overview of judgment and justice, okay? All right, so judges were appointed to ensure justice. All right, justice is the standard by which judgment is executed. Okay. One thing about justice that we have to recall and immediately place in a specific context in our minds and our heart is that justice is an attribute. Like, he is just. Right? So that should hopefully shift any previous understanding you've had of justice in an earthly, worldly realm. Justice is meant to be a reflection of his character, even originally, as he initiated essentially the judicial system or justice and judgment. But when we have our hands on something, it can be added to, it can be taken away from, right? It can be defiled and made impure. And so at the foundation of justice, it is about his character and him as a being who is just. There would be no justice without the defining attribute of Yahweh, who represents what is and what is not just. So that has to then, like, knock you, like, if you're up here thinking, I know what is just, you immediately have to say, well, wait, I'm gonna let him take me down here, because he is still redefining his character in my life. Right? We're still having to wrestle through religion and what religion would even say judgment and justice are.
Yeah.
Right? And how they point back to a false representation of his character.
Right.
Which is part of what I'm so excited about when it comes to requirements of justice, because it's going to bring, I think, a level of purity to, like, to the sordid, I guess, nature or the confusion that could be still residing in our spirits. When it comes to his character, every time the word, every time he releases a word over our house, it's like he turns part of his face and he just gives you another, it's like all of a sudden you get to behold another part or another angle, another feature, another side to who he is that brings more of a complete picture, and it changes everything that it's connected to in you. So that's what's happening. Okay. I went off on a tangent about his face. Okay. That was all justice being an attribute. He is just. His nature, his actions, his judgments, they are the expression and definition of righteousness. Right?
Yeah.
So it makes sense that up to this point we wouldn't have a clear understanding of his character if we didn't believe that what he says walking in righteousness was necessary.
Right. Yeah.
The entire concept of morality comes from how he is.
Yeah.
The entire concept of what's moral has to do with every feature of his face. The entire concept. And from how he is, that gets multiplied in your obedience to his moral instruction. So the only way that you can carry on the attribute of justice is through righteousness, which also is a requirement of justice, according to this portion, which we'll get to. Okay. Judgment is the administration of justice. It's the act of holding us accountable to our own choices, both natural consequences of violating his moral principles, which we've learned, right? Where we used to blame and accuse. And he was like, guys, I gave you, I am such a loving father. I gave you instructions to safeguard, protect, to bless, to bring abundance to, and you stepped outside. I can't cover you there. Not because he's not faithful, not because he's not good, but because just like any child, you have a choice. Right? So it's about stepping outside of his boundaries. So judgment is the act of holding us accountable to our own choices, both natural consequences of violating his moral principles or stepping outside of his boundaries, his covering, his protection, all of the things that we learned when he was trying to flip our perspective on, but are you good? Right? Or, okay, so we have holding us accountable through natural consequences or divinely executed consequences. They're distinct, but they're also one and the same. Does that make sense? Okay. All right, so that's judgment. It's the administration of justice. All right, so Yahweh has to hold individuals accountable. He holds us accountable. We also see and feel how he holds nations accountable, right? For their moral choices, which are directed and governed by him, meaning he gives moral instruction. And there's accountability because he's holy. There's not accountability because he's mean or vindictive. There's accountability because he's holy and he has to address evil. He has to address what opposes who he is and how he operates. And again, these concepts aren't new either because they're things that we had to sort through when we were receiving his character through the expression of instruction. His justice and his judgment are not just about, I just talked about like consequences, right? That choices require consequence because he has to confront what's not holy by his very nature. It's not even like a, it's not even like this decision where he's like, I don't know, I think about the infallibility that I walk in as a parent. Or the flaw, I should say, like the, as a parent, where I'm wishy-washy, and I mean, I'm working on it, but I'm wishy-washy, and I will, you know, bring a, I'm like, I'm, if you transgress, I will bring consequence and correction because I love you. I stink so much that I will pacify a transgression because I am, oh my gosh, and we're going to get to this, I am partial. And I'm bribable. And I am so flawed that I can't even see beyond that moment, and he is so perfect that it's not even a thought. He's not like, should I follow through on this? Is it what's best for them? It's like holiness cannot, there's nothing can, he can't be any other way. I wish I could not be any other way.
Yeah.
Like, I wish that I was so like him that it wasn't even a thought. It was just justice and judgment, justice and judgment, justice and judgment. And I was so filled with righteousness that it was pure. But I'm not. But my point is to compare our understanding or our character even with his in the sense of us seeing it as like, yeah, but because in our humanity we'll think, well, he could just go easy or he could just show great. He because he is holy, he cannot allow it, cannot coexist. Okay. So his justice and his judgment are not just about consequence, but they're about order and they're about restoration. Which is remarkable because when I think about my lacks, my failures as a parent, and I think about how justice and judgment will allow for order and restoration, I'm not even allowing my children to experience the restoration that comes with order.
Come on.
All right. Okay. So hopefully we have a little bit of a not just refresher on judgment and justice because it has been taught before and we have a new, in our newness, we have a deeper understanding of those things, of his character that it all points back to, but also that we have a new, deeper understanding because his character has been redefined, that we can look at this differently. All right, so that's kind of our overview on judgment and justice, okay? Okay, now as you move through the portion, it gets laid out pretty kind of black and white or pretty, I guess, it felt like an outline because then it goes into the requirements of justice. And there were three. There could be more. Oh, his mom's like, there were six. But I got three. And I'm gonna list what they are and then we're gonna dive into all of them. Okay? So the requirements of justice according to this word was that justice must be righteous, justice must be pursued, and justice must not be twisted. Okay. All right, justice must be righteous. You guys know how my mind works when I teach. I always share my questions where I'm like, I read it and then I asked him a question and then he asked me a question that then made me realize how little understanding I have and and how opposed to him I've been and the depths of my heart and the condition I've been in. And then I ask him, what do I do? And so, anyways, okay, so if justice must be righteous, how do we know if it is? How do we know if it's righteous? Okay. It's, I think, pretty simple. All right, it aligns with his word and his character. Now, this is tricky. It's simple, but we can allow it to be tricky because this means that we have to be familiar, not familiar in a lackadaisical way of where I know, right? But we have to be intimately familiar with what his word and his character determines as righteous. which is really challenging when you're used to the structure of religion, which is so entangled with arrogance and pride. Because then it tells you do know. Right? I know the word. I know his character. But there's a difference between familiarity with the word and his character and being intimately familiar with the word and his character. Okay? And who he is and how he operates and how he says to multiply it, what he determines as righteous, not what I determine as righteous. Right? Because then I'm sitting on a seat that he didn't give me permission to sit on. Okay? All right. Now, there's another aspect to this as far as how do we know if it's righteous. Okay? So first, we said it aligns with his word and his character, which means we have to be familiar with what his word and character determine as righteous. Okay. This is another caveat. Okay? Not just, gosh, I love when one of the Yubeta kids responds. He's like, okay, I'm taking notes. It's being written on my heart. It just, I don't know which one it was, but it's so encouraging. when children understand, it just brings, you're like, okay. Because they're just so pure and they're receiving. So, we must be familiar with what his word and character determines as righteous. But here's the caveat. Not just as a concept, but a lifestyle. So, you could be intimate or familiar with his word and his character, but have you applied? There's another caveat. I keep saying it different. There's another one. Not just personal in your lifestyle, but communal. I said we were moving beyond the individual into the community. Right? You can understand how if judges are appointed by the community, they're divinely appointed, and there's a community aspect to that seat, right, to them being appointed, that righteousness as a lifestyle has been communal, meaning integrity, honesty, all of the ways that Yahweh would, I'm summing up the entire Torah by saying integrity, honesty, morality, what he dictates as his moral standards, that has to have been displayed. Because if it hasn't been displayed, then it's either the knowledge you've been acquiring is for you, or it isn't real. Meaning you're back in religion, and it's for you to benefit or to be elevated in some way that serves you. If it hasn't become communal, it's for you. That's what I'm trying to say. Does that make sense? Righteousness, by the very nature of it being actionable, has to be seen. So if you proclaim righteousness and at the same time, not everyone would say about you that they're just or fair or have integrity or are honest, etc., 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 then there's something to evaluate. Does that make sense? Okay. So, for justice to be righteous, it has to align with his word and his character, which means we have to be familiar with what his word and character determines as righteous. Not just as a concept, but as a lifestyle. Not just personal but communal. Okay. So that was number one, the first requirement of justice. All right. Number two, justice must be pursued. This is something that should deeply connect with us because we have come a long way in understanding pursuit. We are no longer complacent. We are no longer lax. We aren't casual or passive. We operate in zeal. We learned all about what it looks like to be zealous on his behalf. Okay, so for justice to be pursued, it means that we can't see justice as casual. Or we can't be casual, a better way to say it would be, we can't be casual in our approach to what is unjust.
Yeah.
We can't be passive in our approach to what is unjust.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because without justice, there cannot be life or possession of the land. Which we're going to go into when we get towards the end of the portion. Okay? There can't be true worship. If the maintaining of justice is not priority, there is a lack of accountability to righteousness, which then has the ability to permeate the individual and multiply within the community. Which brings us back to corruption within will then rob the community of joy, which is true worship. This also makes me think of, when I think of justice having to be pursued, I think of the word that came about vigilance. That we must be vigilant over what is unjust. Okay. That was number two. Justice must be pursued, which means it isn't casual or passive. We must be zealous. For without it, there can't be life or possession of the land. There can't be true worship. Okay? All right. Number three. This one we're going to take some time on. Justice must not be twisted. All right. He is so good that he tells us what twists it. Or what he defines as a twisting of justice. There's two things that he describes as a twisting of justice. Partiality and a bribe. All right. Off the bat, partiality or a bribe can make you be like, I would never. No? Anyone? Did anyone read the portion and be like, I would never take a bribe?
I would never apply to a
natural. Yes. Anyone? Did anyone else think that? You can answer. No? Am I the only one who thought that? Okay. Meaning like...
Just so you know, I knew that I somehow did it, but I don't know if I understood how I did it.
Okay, there we go.
No one ever paid me cash to...
Sure, yes. Yeah. Meaning you hear it literal, yeah. And our tendency, what I'm trying to say, and give you permission to acknowledge... Yeah. Is that when we hear things like this, we can hear it black and white because we want to preserve ourselves.
Yeah.
I'm saying, I know I'm not the only one who does that. That's what I'm saying, okay? Yeah. Is I'll be like, I've never accepted a bribe. Okay? It might be a fleeting thought. I'm a little more mature than that, but not by much. So that is my initial response. And so I want to make sure that we're like, I could never be partial, and I would never accept a bribe. Yes, you are, and yes, you would. Okay? And this is why. If Yeshua says it's about our thoughts or it's about our mind, and then it's already happened. I'm telling you, you are partial and you have accepted bribes. Okay? All right, this is why. We're going to break down the understanding of partiality and a bribe. All right. So essentially, partiality, for the sake, there's going to be different definitions, pretend you don't know anything. The definition we're going to use tonight of partiality is an unfair bias. Okay, it's already registering to you. I can feel people being like,
something happened there.
yes. Be like, oh, okay. Well, maybe I could be a person with a little bias. Maybe I could have a perspective that's unfair. Yes. All right. So partiality is an unfair bias. Okay? Yahweh, I'm going to rebuke a thought. Yahweh does not show partiality. That is not the same as him showing divine favor. He's allowed to show divine favor. I mean, he's allowed to do whatever he wants. But my point is, don't twist the two and think, well, but he shows favor all the time. Usually when that's your thought, it's because you feel like he doesn't favor you. So pay attention to that kind of reaction, because it's probably also pointing you back to your bias.
Yes.
Okay? All right. So, Yahweh shows no partiality. Partiality is an unfair bias. Essentially, partiality is a manifestation of judgment. And I'm not talking about justice and judgment as in he is the standard for what it looks like to execute judgment. I'm talking about being judgmental. Okay? That partiality is a manifestation of operating in judgment. That's just one aspect of it. And this is why. We're going to talk a little bit about where partiality comes from. Okay? Being partial means that your heart is split. It's about a divided heart. So when I ask Yahweh the question, where does partiality come from? His answer was a split or divided heart. Specifically in loyalty. Loyalty. Partiality comes from a split or divided heart in loyalty. I'm going to explain that a little bit more. Our heart can become partial or divided when we allow competing priorities, essentially whom we serve, to be split. Okay? So there are reasons why we wrestle with whom we serve, or why our heart can be split in loyalties, why there can be priorities that compete. I mean, I'm just trying to give different kinds of language to help us identify like where we are in that. But essentially, it could look like, what it could be pointing to would be like unresolved, like heart alleys. So unresolved pain, trauma, like those kinds of things, or unaddressed sin that literally creates in you this conflict. Okay? So instead of a heart that's fully devoted, that's completely loyal, the heart splits. And it's like it's giving half of its affection over here and half of its affection over here. Or it might not even be split down the middle. You could have a completely fractured heart that is split in 20 ways, and your loyalty is to this, to this, to this, to this, to this, and you better believe when your loyalty is divided, you are going to have an unfair bias. Okay? And basically what that means as far as like what a bias could look like is it's where we give more favor or more of like a, so if my heart is loyal here and my heart is loyal here instead of fully loyal to him, then what happens is when there are life circumstances, when there has been pain, all of the things that I just described, your heart doesn't know how to fully be given over to him. So it's like ultimate confusion. Does that make sense? It's like you get pulled in all these different ways. All right, so when it comes to a bias, or that favor, that I tend to favor this to that because my heart is divided, right? That there's a couple reasons or a couple different ways to look at being biased. So one is completely subconscious. We don't understand that we are biased. Okay, that can come from life circumstances. Maybe you experienced something when you were a child and it literally caused your heart to be like to break and then be loyal to this thing forever. And Yahweh directs you in something, and because your heart is still loyal over here, you see what's happening or what's being presented here that's demanding your loyalty through this filter. But you don't even know. That's a subconscious bias. This isn't over-spiritualizing. This is a psychological concept. Okay? I'm not like making up words. You can literally research, how does a human being develop a bias? What does it look like to have a bias? And it will tell you there are subconscious bias, there are, it's etc. Okay. So an aspect of a subconscious bias that we want to be aware of is that it will have everything to do with like your framework or like the wording that mom uses, your operating system. So you can be completely unaware that the way that you see even what is just is filtered through an operating system that you don't know is operating. And so you will say, this is fair and this is not. And it has nothing to do with what he says is fair and what he says is not. What he says is just and what he says is unjust. Okay? All right. Now, the other one that I want to talk about is technically called confirmation bias. Okay? Now, this, I am going to over-spiritualize. Okay? I don't literally mean over-spiritualize as in that's pulled out of nowhere, that's ridiculous. I mean this is so spiritual, it's ridiculous. Okay. Confirmation bias, in my definition, this is not the psychological definition, this is the over-spiritualized definition, is essentially about justification and self-preservation. I could have a bias that allows me to stay in a place. Meaning, I could have a bias that confirms or feeds my own beliefs. My own lifestyle, my own way of thinking, my own way of operating. Is that clear? Okay. All right. So there can be subconscious. You can be subconsciously biased. Or, I mean, I guess you could be subconsciously in confirmation bias. You could be unaware that you operate in confirmation bias, right? And it's just a way to preserve yourself and justify your actions and your behaviors and your thoughts, and you don't even know you're doing it because you're so good at self-preservation. Right? Which, when you are super good at self-preservation, the only way out of self-preservation is for someone outside of yourself to tell you that you self-preserve. Like, you have to, that is part of the gift of community. Right? Because when we are dying on behalf of ourselves, like literally trying to save ourselves, and someone's like, you're trying to save yourself. And you're like, no. How do you know? Literally, how do you know? You don't. And all you have to do is acknowledge that you don't know. Super easy. Conceptually. Conceptually, it's super easy, but dying to yourself can definitely be hard. Not saying it's simple. All right, so that's our breakdown of bias. And partiality in general. Do we have an understanding of partiality? Okay, can we have such an understanding of partiality that we can recognize where we're prone to being partial? Okay, all right, perfect. All right, then we can move into a bribe. Okay. I would never accept a bribe. All right. And yet, what he has walked us through when it comes to a bribe is that we are really consistent at placing self-interest above truth. Right? Only one again. Okay, that's really all that means. Literally, of course, it's receiving something of value, but hear that. A bribe is receiving something of value in order for someone else to gain favor. Which we don't realize when we're giving ourselves over who we're giving favor to.
Can you say that
again? Oh,
sorry.
I'll try. No, it's good for me to, I'm just teasing you.
Receiving something of value in order to...
For someone else to gain favor. But what I'm saying, what I'm trying to appeal to us in is that if we are the ones who are of greater value, meaning if I believe that I'm receiving something, by preserving myself, by putting myself first, I'm receiving something of greater value than truth.
Nope. Not myself.
Which we could do at any point, at any time of any day, because it's a simple exchange like that.
Yeah.
So bribery then starts to look a little bit less like what you see in a movie and a little bit more like what we do in our everyday lives.
Yeah.
Right? Okay. So this concept of bribery, the literal sense and the spiritual sense, It opposes his character because he is full truth. And he asks us to die on behalf of ourselves for truth. So the exchange that's meant to take place in our lives is that I would die to myself and say, what I value, or even my value, is actually dependent on truth. So if I place myself above truth, I have no value. Does that make sense? Meaning outside of truth, I have no value. Do you need to hear that again? Or are we?
Probably.
Just when it feels hard. Outside of truth, you have no value. So if you compromise, in quotes, your value for truth, you are devaluing yourself. Okay. So it's about the compromising of truth, bribery essentially is about the compromising of truth on behalf of self. Right? Because that's what, if you want to be literal, that's what a literal bribe is. Turn a blind eye to truth, and I will give you something. I will show you value. Does that make sense? But in a literal sense, his nature is rooted in absolute moral clarity. And bribery distorts that. Literally and in you, it distorts your value. Are we, every time there's a word on the value of his instruction or the need for that instruction, I kind of follow that along to then, well, what can I do to uphold it? And part of the word, part of the portion, is revealing to us what will uphold the law. So this is pointing at a system he established to uphold the law. The integrity of the law, the maintenance of the law, the purity of the law, that it must be upheld. Now, part of why it has to be upheld outside of you is because we will always be partial and biased when it comes to ourselves. Which is why a third party is necessary. That's why there are divinely appointed judges. When it comes to ourselves, we will die on behalf of preserving. Right? Like, we will fight to preserve ourselves hard. That fight is so dominant, it's so strong, that Yahweh divinely appointed a third party, gave them authority to ensure that that partiality and that bias, even in you, doesn't take place. Which is a powerful spiritual concept, because we're talking then also about, when we talk about a third party, we're talking about mediation. We're talking about the seat that Yeshua resides in. We're talking about a future of judgment on earth. I mean, we're talking about a lot when we say a third party, right? But ultimately, going back to the individual and the community, part of why that's such a powerful spiritual concept is because the system that upholds the law, this system, not only safeguards the community, just like we were talking about at the beginning of the portion, but it protects the individual from themselves. So going back to a child and how a consequence will bring order and restoration, that can't be executed internally. Because you will preserve yourself and be partial before you allow him to bring you death so that you can be alive. Does that make sense? It's about order and it's about restoration. So that again is speaking to the shift that we've come under in his character. The way we see judgment as punishment versus a preservation or a element that begins a path of order and restoration. I wouldn't want to be in a seat of executing justice and judgment on behalf of myself. Because I know that I would self-preserve and I wouldn't allow the fullness of justice to take place through his judgment, because I'd be like, I don't want to be judged. And he's like, can you let me set some things in order so that you can be restored and whole? And you don't get to question how I establish that order. You don't get to challenge the judgment that I render. You just have to know me, trust me, and obey. Because what we've talked about with even righteous judgment cannot be subject to opinions, moods, or feelings.
Yeah.
And if I have to execute judgment of myself, I'm going to be feeling, I'm going to be controlling, I'm going to have opinions, right? Or even just the preservation of that system in general and the need for a third party and for that third party to have essentially requirements of that seat. Meaning, we're not necessarily going to dive into the requirements of that seat because I haven't really studied that. But what we can gain from this portion is that they were divinely and communally appointed. Think about the level of responsibility because of what and who that seat represents. There's going to be requirements. Because righteous judgment cannot be subject to opinions, moods, or feelings. All right. We are almost through the word. And the last part of the portion has to do with, without justice, there cannot be, and there's two things that the portion describes. Without justice, there cannot be life, and there cannot be possession of the land. We have a new definition of life, right? It's not just you're alive or you're dead. It's the word in this portion says, so you may live. Yes, it's about the actual preservation of life, because we know what a life of sin produces, but it's also literal, or injustice, I should say, to make sure we're connecting sin, injustice, corruption, defilement. But it's about truly living, which points us back to joy. It's about being a slave versus being bound. Right? Living is about being bound to Him. So Torah, we know His instructions are life-giving and sustaining, which is why Yahweh consistently, repeatedly, over and over again, since we have put so much, turned our attention, since He's turned our hearts to His instructions, we have recognized a pattern, which is that Yahweh says over and over, His instructions equate to life and blessing. So that means then, when we allow injustice to go without righteous judgment, there will be erosion and destruction over time, because it undermines what is life-giving. So, He's so good that in response to the erosion and destruction of living, of life, He establishes or created a system to reestablish order through justice. So you could literally see it as the preservation of life. I'm going to say that whole thing one more time in the way that I wrote it. Okay. So without justice, there cannot be life. The word says, so that you may live. It isn't just literal. It's about truly living in the way we've come to understand it now. It's about being bound to righteous living. Torah is life-giving and sustaining. Without righteous judgment, corruption will come, it will continue to permeate, and it will bring destruction over time in you and in community, because it undermines what is life-giving. So in response, justice comes and it reestablishes order. And it preserves life. Okay, second one. Without justice, there cannot be possession of the land. So, when we allow injustice, we essentially are giving up, or this is how I hear it, we are laying down our ownership. We're also laying down our ability to drive out opposition. It's like literally giving over the territory that He said, I need you to claim. Not on your behalf, but because it's about the fulfillment of covenant. So So we have to remember, whenever it says, it, without justice, there can't be possession of the land, we have to remember what possession of the land represents, which is the fulfillment of covenant, his promises, identity, inheritance, his character, his will, and, as we learned recently, the future of his reign on earth, that it is about land. Without justice, there cannot be possession of the land. Is that clear? All right. That's it.
Just those ten scriptures.
Can I add something?
Mm-hmm.
So I just want to tie it back to the beginning, because I find it interesting. Not interesting, but the whole purpose of why these scriptures were put together is it started with Sukkot, which she's talked about with Joy, but I want to make it, she just finalized that whole thing about the future reign, mm-hmm. which is everything that Sukkot stands for. Mm-hmm. So even when she started this and she said, oh, we know that. No, you don't. We've only rehearsed a couple of times mm-hmm. tabernacles. Mm-hmm. Yeah. We have no idea what it means mm-hmm. in its future state. So mm-hmm. all of this is a system that is not for you to live a better life
right.
today,
yeah.
which it will,
yeah.
but it's for you to get intimate with this system, because one day it will rule
yeah.
in the natural.
Yeah. Yeah.
And we're not going to be aware
yeah.
of what justice is.
Yep.
When we have a king
yes.
that comes back.
Yes.
And he's not coming back to hand out some hammocks and... Like, he's not coming back to just be like, I'm here.
Yeah.
And we're just going to be like, cool.
Yep.
There's a purpose.
Yep.
And this is part of the issue, is we never study what happens when he comes back.
Mm-hmm.
Even if the thought process is, when he comes back, I'm going somewhere. Where are you going? There's still wherever you're going, there's a system you're going to
yeah.
be submitted to.
Yeah.
And if
yeah.
we're not acquainted
yeah.
with who he is, we're going to have this wrong
Yeah.
I'm going to read something that's going to be a little annoying. Isaiah 19. I'm going to just expand you just for a little bit. Isaiah 19 is a prophet, right?
Right.
Some of the prophecies have been fulfilled. Some have not. This should be good news, but usually that's offensive. But all of Isaiah did not happen in Matthew 1. Study your word. There's a lot in Isaiah that has not happened.
Mm-hmm.
That is a good thing that I present that, because it shows his character.
Mm-hmm.
Because then we would have to believe in one that can change his mind or be like, well, not
yes.
that, but not this.
Yep. Yeah.
Okay, so Isaiah 19 has not all the way happened. All right, so I'm in verse 4. I will give the Egyptians. Now, that is a representation of a literal place, but we also know what Egypt means.
Yes.
I am going to give the Egyptians into the land of a cruel master, a fierce king who will rule over them.
Mm-hmm.
What king do you think they're talking about?
Yeah.
Messiah.
Yeah.
Now, it's interesting, because there's a lot of versions that use cruel, but you've got to look into it. What I want you to meditate on,
yeah.
the point of the reason
yeah.
why I'm saying that, is I want you to meditate on this, because there's a difference between cruel and strict.
Mm-hmm.
Meditate on that, because the word is cruel, but when you look at it, it means harsh, strict.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not even like this future reign is this like, oh, it's going to be blissful. But not outside of order.
Yeah.
And there's going to be a lot of things that are going to have to be put in order, and we're going to have to understand that justice. So this
yeah.
is, so it all
yeah.
then ties back to tabernacles,
yeah.
which is how we will be able to operate. Every knee shall bow. Every tongue will confess, and there will be no tears. How can that be if there's not extreme order and justice? So while this can be a lot, I love that we get to revisit in our new. I love how you said, the word is not new, but I'm new.
Yeah.
And there's something about even everything that you're saying is bringing
clarity to even the seat shift. Mm-hmm. Even going back to Aaronic leadership versus Eliezer and what it means to be a Joshua generation that's fighting versus learning.
Yeah.
And what he's giving us right now to be able to understand in the midst of what it is that he's doing in our family in a real way,
yeah,
is showing us how to position ourselves to lean in about some of the new facial features.
Mm-hmm.
Like that was such a beautiful way of saying it, because it's like I am learning aspects of him I never thought I would be able to embrace. And while they are new or hard or interesting, understanding his character is bringing so much freedom of what that means.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't even know if that's making sense.
Yeah.
Let me say this in the spirit. One of the things that he's given me is he has said this before in sermon, and every single one of us have amened. When I said that he does not want, remember when we were the ones at the face of this, when he was warning us, I don't want to do this.
Yes.
Without you.
Yes.
Yeah.
But I will.
Yep.
I'm talking about when we were just little peons trying to fight for a different culture in Flagstaff.
Yeah.
And he was trying to say, like, look, I'm going to do it with or without.
Yeah.
But I don't want to, but I will.
Yeah.
That kind of can be like, I mean, that's just the, anyways.
Sure.
It's like, is that making sense what I'm saying? Yeah. There are parts of him that have been spoken for us to be able to understand who he is to be able to bring order, which still goes back to standard and holiness. And thinking about, I'm partly doing this for my parents because they're always like, why do you not preach out of the New Testament? But we're in a 3-year study for such a time as this to understand, because we're having to relearn Yahweh's character because we thought he was the big bad guy that Yeshua came to save us from. And he said, I don't do anything outside my Father.
Right.
So we have to relearn his character. But think about it. So Yeshua comes on the scene, and the king they were looking for is that kind of king.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And yet he kept warning. It does not mean, well, see, he's a different type of king. He's the grace guy.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. No, he came on the earth, read the prophets, to bring a warning, repent, the kingdom of God is at hand.
Yeah.
That was his only assignment.
Yeah.
If it wasn't his only assignment, Romans would have been absolutely obliterated and he would be ruling. Mm-hmm. That didn't happen.
Yeah.
Because there, but that the king that they were looking for is coming.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So the only thing we have right now is to sit in the warning of repent, for the kingdom of God is at hand. And the kingdom is a whole lot more than just healing.
Yes.
How do you operate in a healing land outside of order?
Yeah.
He will not do that.
Yeah.
Every time he healed, he didn't say, now go get an ice cream. He said, go and sin no more.
Right.
There was always something that healing was attached to so that you could continue in the healing.
Yeah, right.
And when he reigns, there will be a flood. It's not going to be instantaneous. It is going to be a journey of increased healing.
Yeah.
I mean, we're going to be able to count our lives, not in decades, but in centuries. And you're going to be able to continually eat under the fruit that brings. It's just going to keep increasing. Like, not even like it's one and done. Then am I making any sense?
Yeah.
But meaning that there, in order to increase healing, there's going to be an increase in now sin no more. But it's not longer repent.
Right.
It's I'm here.
Yes.
It's no more.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now that's going to be some justice.
Yes.
I think I want to practice now.
Yes.
Amen.
Yeah.
Amen. Yeah.
Thank you for that word.
Really good.
Thank you, Megan. Thank you, Mom, for adding to that. You're like the cherry on the top to still get to hear your voice in it. So that was awesome. Why don't you guys just start preparing your tithes and offerings? I know that we all have like three weeks worth of income that we need to dispense into the home. So if you guys want to start preparing that. I did just want to take a couple things that Megan was releasing on and just kind of flip our perspective into how we will ask him to bring judgment or justice over our tithes or our finances. And he's been saying, like, well, we must be righteous. We must be, we must pursue it. We must not be twisted. Like, if we're the reason behind, like, the things that he's asking us to step into or the things that he's wanting us to own, or if he is wanting us to really be a people who can steward his finances and his flow of resources, then we have to make sure that we are pursuing everything that she's speaking to, of making sure that we're righteous, that we are pursuing him and his understanding, but we're also doing the work to pursue the finances, that, like, doing the diligence and the things that we need to do to make sure that we're doing the work and not just sitting there waiting for him to, like, give us a handout, right? And that we are not twisted then in the resources as they come in. And so making sure that we're doing that work. Otherwise, the erosion and destruction that she was speaking to will obviously happen within us, but then also happen within the community. Whether you have the finances or you don't, there's erosion and destruction either way. Does that make sense? So when we allow for that, then we give up our ownership and our territory within the home. Because if we're not owning whatever finances we need to do, or we're not giving of that, then we're, like, we're then that tool of destruction. And we then are giving up our own ownership to the territory he's given us within our home. And the thing that he's asked us to claim. And then just continuing to walk out the answer that she was presenting in his system reestablishes order. So know him, trust him, and obey. So, like, those simple things. So I'll start passing this around. But if you also remember, did anybody look at the Kingdom Hearts box and see that we're in a first group? Did anybody look into Sivan? We are a week late, so hopefully everybody's had time to, like, dive into that. I think this month is kind of crazy. I think that there's a lot in it. I mean, just to give some, like, random facts about it, you are connecting your talk to your walk. This is the business month where you learn prosperity principles. So you can be engaging those things. But another thing that I thought was really interesting, I looked into, like, the word first within first fruit. Like, what does that, where does that kind of come up? And obviously it takes you back to Genesis 1:1, where he was, like, he was speaking to the first, and it's the same, like, the word that he uses for first fruit is the same word as Genesis 1:1. And so there's an aspect of going back to the beginning, which I also think is crazy, because the Hebrew letter for this month is Zayin, which is the crowned man. And a lot of things that I have read or looked into about Zayin is that it talks about it, because it's the crowned man, it's Adam before the fall. So it's almost like Zayin walks the timeline. And so you can engage an aspect of going back to the beginning or the first in this month and restoring things all the way back to the beginning. And so as we're, like, walking through that, there's an aspect of, like, mercy or his grace for completion for the things. Like, if he can go backwards, then he can also go forwards, right? So if there's things that he's asked us to walk out but then also call forward, so that he can be part with us, then there's things that we can do and sow into to bring that timeline closer during this month. You can also receive boundaries, and it's a time to review your alignment. So what a perfect time for judgment and justice. So as you guys are sowing into all of that, make sure that we're intentional, knowing that we carry the home.
Sorry, I'm sorry.
You're fine.
For the month of Sivan, because we shifted into this at Shavuot. So I want you to tie that we are in the third month of leaving slavery. There was a purpose for this miracle moment in our life, and this is the month that you capture that purpose. This is the reason he took us from one place to another,
was for us to be able to have what, how to worship him. Remember, he took us out of Egypt so that what?
Yeah.
So that we could just not be under Pharaoh, so you could have a better life? We usually identify with that. I want the Pharaoh out of my life, but then we never adopt. I want the king I can learn how to properly worship and be enamored and in covenant and in love and in passionate with something. So with the giving of the Torah, as well as Ruach, that happens this month, where the whole reason why he died and rose was so that he could be inside of you. It happens in this month so that you can, like you said, walk out the miracle.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I just want to add that when you're sowing into your first fruits and you're struggling with, well, what is my purpose? Or how do I get out of the mindset that I'm not just happy that I'm not in slavery, but that I am absolutely enamored to be bound to a king that I get to absolutely worship and be close to and learn about, because that was the whole purpose of being in covenant.
Yes.
Remember what I talked about Shavuot? The next day is day one.
Yes.
We're in that month for your purpose of why you were delivered.
Amen.
So even on a practical level, if there's something that you've been delivered from but you don't know what the purpose was for, fight for it.
Yes.
Because there's a purpose for us as to why he delivered us.
Okay.
He did not just deliver you so you could be full.
Yep.
He delivered you so that generations can be full.
Yes.
So what is the purpose that you're going to blast him? Because again, it's a public display. The whole reason why he did that and the whole reason why Moshe was able to say, please do not take these people out, was because you are going to be humiliated to the nations if you do not fulfill what you promised.
Yeah.
And so it's for him to be... on display is our role. That's why you were delivered. So if there's any part of you, again, back at Shavuot, Psalm 119. If there's any part of Psalm 119 that is just not absolutely at the forefront, seven times a day, the Torah, your word, is my delight.
Yeah.
It's my drug. It's better than alcohol. It's better than sex. It's better than business. It's better than money. It's better than relationship. It's better than isolation. It's better than being alone, whatever it is. You know, I can sit and anyways, that would be bigger than anything is the purpose of why you were delivered.
Yes.
And that's this month. So when you're sowing into that, say, I want a little taste of that.
Yeah.
And sow into that. So
that's good.
Amen.
Okay, I'm done.
Thank you, Mom.
Yeah.
So after you have done that, everybody's ready? Let's bring in and go ahead and gather. We'll grab our elements and we'll do that as well.
I think I was the last one. Does everybody have their elements? Everybody good?
Yes.
No spills?
No.
Besides right here? Okay. All right. Okay. I'm going to keep this very quick and very brief because tonight was absolutely full. There's no like extra whatever I could add to the word. Everything that Megan brought, everything Mom added to, everything that we came in ready for tonight was just like the phrase is on point. and it feels absolutely full. But in light of what communion, we know what it had represented at some point, and we know that we've come to understand that it is not just a thing that we do because it feels good and we're seeking a moment and all this stuff, right? But we know that it's a prophetic act, right? And that feels very fitting in knowing what was released tonight, especially in the aspect of community joy in knowing what is to come, knowing that every time we see more of him and become more of him, we close the gap, knowing that every time we engage, every time we continue to be more of a reflection of him and we step more into that place, that we're closing that gap. So let this be a prophetic act in literally what I see is like as we take these communion elements, as we consume this is something that's been said and we've engaged before, but let it be a real deep place that we see and we feel and we experience tonight, that we take these elements and we feel it break down, disperse itself throughout our entire being, into every cell, into every aspect of who we are and what our being is, knowing that this prophetic act of what is to come is shifting us and turning us toward that thing as we continue to step into a place of closing that gap.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So, yeah, short and sweet. Let that be the thing that we experience, that we activate tonight as we take our elements, and we'll take communion here as a family.